You are listening to The Broken Chords by Jill Mattson. Jill's going to be our guest tonight here on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. This is Sound Hills. Thank you for joining us. That was beautiful music. We're going to talk to Joy in just a minute about a fascinating area of transformation through sound. Jill is a multi-talented lady, and we're going to talk to her right after a few announcements. Some of these announcements are good, some are bad. Last Thursday on the Vocal Profiling Live show, we gave out our address as radio@vocalprofiling.com. That's been our address for years. We've been getting email for years. Well, somebody bombed the site. So those of you who wrote to us, because we offered some free things, your email went to Never Never Land, a black hole of email. So we got a new email address. You can write to us at Sherry, Sharry, on air, one word, Sherry on air, at gmail.com. I'm monitoring that mail this evening. We're also going to entertain calls, and we'll give you those numbers in just a bit. But it seems like that the people on BBS Radio who are giving you the truth, and BBS Radio itself is kind of getting bombed because they don't really want the neat information out there. Those of you who missed that Thursday show, Vocal Profiling Live, we did an evaluation of Obama's inauguration speech. So if you missed that, go to BBS Radio. That was on Station 2. Look at the archives under our show at 6 o'clock Pacific time, and you'll get to see some of that. But we'll also send you a copy of the paper if you'll just write to me at sherryonair@gmail.com. Here on this show, Sound Health, we like to give people ideas and information to support their search for self-health and self-awareness. And our guest tonight is really one of those people that just came zipping into our life, and we're very happy she did. We were doing a show in Columbus, Ohio, I believe, and she came over to the booth and gave us her book, beautiful little book, Transformation, Power, and Sound. And she gave us her music. That music that we played at the beginning of the show, she wrote that music. She also did all the artwork for the album. Like I said, she's a writer, a composer, a musician, an artist, a researcher, a fascinating person. She came to visit us at the center in Ohio, and I talked her into being on the show and sharing some of the knowledge that she has gathered. I could sit and listen to her for hours with all the things that she knows. We may have to have her back several times. Jill, are you with us?
Yes, and you're so kind. I was almost wondering who you were talking about.
How did you happen to pick our booth just to stop at the expo?
Oh, I went through, I have a passion for sound healing, and I went to, I always look at anything that has anything to do with sound healing, and I was very excited that you were there.
Had you not heard of us before?
Yes, I had. I had heard of you from, Jeff Thompson had recommended you to me a couple years earlier, and so I was thrilled at the chance to come introduce myself.
Well, tell us about this book that you dropped off to us.
Sure.
This your first book?
Yeah, the first book that I've published, yes.
Did you also do all the artwork for it? It's beautiful.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I've always had just a passion for music. I've loved music. I've played it all my life. I can sit down and write a symphony in the time it takes me to write it down. It's like I've always known how to do it. Sometimes I hear them. Sometimes I kind of dream them up. It's like cosmic plagiarism almost. I think I'm inspired or inspirited. So music has been this incredible passion. And then I was also very interested in antiquity, and I spent probably 15 years reading antiquity. And I loved different religions and mystic societies, and anytime I saw anything about music, it's like my heart started to beat, and I got all happy and excited, and I just started filling notebooks, and the next thing you know, I have piles of notebooks on techniques to change your consciousness with music. And I guess I feel very guided to write that book. The people just kind of introduced themselves to me in the order in which they were appropriate. So, and people would come up to me that I didn't even know and say things like, this book speaks to you, and they'd give me a book, and there was my next piece of information for it. It was kind of fun. It was magic.
Are you musically trained and artistically trained, or this stuff just fell on you as knowing how to do it already?
Well, I played violin as a child, and so that's my primary instrument. And in fact, that was the only one that I really played. But again, I've just been really lucky with a lot of magic. Like I remember one time when my son was in sixth grade, and I was going to his open house. And I was standing in line to say hello, and I had this really weird experience. It's like the room froze, and it was like, na-na-na-na, you know, like you're on some kind of crazy TV show. And his teacher turned to me like a robot, and she said, you have a wonderful voice. And then she turned back in place, and everything kind of went on as normal. And I had never, well, I had sung before, and I thought I sounded really horrible. And so I took voice lessons, and it took me about 6 months, but then I was able to sing. It was there, but I just had to kind of, I don't know,
let
open
it out.
The channel.
I have one of your albums in front of me, Paint Your Soul, and it says on it, Wings of Light, all rights reserved. Unauthorized duplication is a violation of applicable laws, and wouldn't you rather be supportive and uplifting of the artist anyway? That's just such a neat thing.
Thank you.
Is this your, do you have more albums than this?
Yes, I have the Paint Your Soul, which I took off of ideas, which I could go into, from the Middle Ages and, probably the Judaic Christian time. And, I got into different types of, different levels of evolution in some of the techniques I used and some of the music I used. And then I did another one, Stardust, that I was going after more like the spirit. And when you look in antiquity and you go back further, there are thousands of years further, people were more interested in balance from what I read, and balancing of the spirit. They perhaps were not as involved as much in matter. And so I have techniques that I could explain to that I used in that one. And then I have two more coming out very soon. They're done. They just need mastered. And that one I got into emotional healing. I guess I've always believed that probably the biggest thing that plagues us all is our emotions, because we as a society tend to deny them. Anyway, I was at this nursing home playing my violin, and I played there once a week for about a year. And my crowd, they were a great audience because they're all in wheelchairs and they couldn't leave. Captive audience. And anyway, but they froze. They were like, they never talked to anybody, and they kind of just kind of curled into little balls, and they were just kind of like zombies. And in fact, I know one guy fell flat on his face, and I thought he was dead in a doornail, and you know, nobody even looked. Very frozen. Anyway, I played very whiny, piney, kind of sad music from their era, and in about 6 months they started talking to me, and after a year it was like normal. And so I got this kind of crazy idea that, you know, music could go into your right brain and could release old hurts. And the thing about doing it with music as opposed to counseling or working through the problems was that you didn't have to go into any of the specifics. You know, it was just enough to feel lonely or to feel sorrow or feel sorry for yourself or whatever bag of emotions, and then you could let it go. So I got in this other one. I wrote 12 symphonies, and I wrote them all on emotions, like attributes, and emotions conquered almost turned into be like attributes. For example, trust of fear. You know, fear would be an emotion we feel, but when you conquer fear, you learn trust, which is also emotion, but it's also like a virtue. And so I did I got into the Bach flowers because my girlfriend was into it, and they had these 12 soul flowers, and they had this wonderful cross section, which I felt could fit almost everybody I ever knew into these different emotional categories. And they were all healing. Like one was agrimony, and that was like pretend kind to real kind. And I guess I identified with that because I've been polite to people and I've been nice. And nice and honest aren't the same thing. And it's so much better to be honest and be true to yourself. And so, like, for that little symphony, what I did there was I was just creative. So I took, like, some of the songs were on synthesizer, and I bent them out of tune after they were sounded. So they were in tune, but it was such a quick process where the tonality decayed that it just left you with like a little bit of bad taste in your mouth. It's like if you had nothing else around it, you might not even notice it. But then when I go into pure harmony, it stuck out like a sore thumb. And it made me more conscious when I kind of went into subconsciously, when I went into a nice mode as opposed to maybe the most honest mode. And it helped me to practice being more honest, and, or to at least be more conscious of the different feelings associated with them, to like improve my consciousness.
I have 100 different directions to go here.
Okay.
Are your albums therapeutic?
I hope so.
Well, let's start with the idea first of transformation through sound and consciousness through sound, and then let's go through each of the albums, what kind of music and scales you used, what you hope to accomplish, and what people would get out of them.
Okay.
So first, your book, Transformation, Power, and Sound. Where do you think that comes from for us as a human race?
Well, this would be it might be a little lengthy detour, but I think you'll find it fascinating if you would. Maybe we could go into a little bit of this antiquity I read, and correlating it with music.
Okay.
And it'll make some really big points. Okay. And again, I just want to preface, when I read stuff in antiquity, I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying I read it, and it certainly is the writer's perspective at any rate. So people have to decide themselves. But the thing I really liked about it, whether it's truth or creative fiction, I really don't know, it opened up my mind to see music in a whole different way. So I got like a paradigm shift out of this. So anyway, this is years of reading, but here we go. When I read ancient stuff, the real ancient stuff is very, very sketchy. And I got a few little things way back from Lemuria, and those were that they had a tonal system where the closest note was 9 of our piano keys apart. And I just have a little reference to that. And then the next kind of reference that I found was with the Atlanteans, and this would have been where the closest note would have been 7 notes apart. I never found anything for the for the octave. And
okay, what was the one that was 9 notes apart?
Lemurian,
okay.
Yeah. And so then and there was reference to, it was kind of like they were talking, they were always talking about like being one with the essence of God. When I got into the Atlantean, where the smallest interval would be 7 notes apart, they're talking about connecting to like your divine God self. And I believe they're talking about involving in matter, because if you have notes or a scale or a song for the smallest interval is 9 or 7 of our notes apart, it's not in our hearing range very much of it. So you would have to have some type of clairaudience or to be less involved perhaps in the matter to be able to hear these tones. So I'm assuming that when I read this, that we're talking about spirits involving or becoming more further away from God. And so then the next thing, and these things are really sketchy right here. And one other thing. In all of these societies, music is not like it is today. It's not entertainment. It's something that's used to control people. It's like a government. It's a controlling force. So anyway, the next thing you read where there's a little bit more on it would be like the Persian and the Indian epics. And then that's the Mesolithic and the Neolithic time periods. With religion, it would be the time of the original Zoroasters. Anyway, then when I read about this, they're talking about you don't get in touch with your God self, but that music helped you get in touch with the planetary logos. I've read a lot about that. I don't know. It's in the readings that I've read. It's some type of spiritual, I don't know, important person, evolved person, whatever. And they talk about the music in these Persian, ancient Persian times of being of like a spiritual essence. Involving, yeah. Each one, like you, I believe you're involving more into matter. Now, the first time we really get a lot written on it is in with the ancient Chinese. Now, we're probably talking, 5,000 years before Christ. And also the Egyptian period. And the writing here, now these notes now are five of our piano notes apart.
Is that Persian, Chinese, or Egyptian?
This would be the Chinese and the Egyptian about at the same time.
Okay, and the Persian?
The Persian was six notes apart.
Okay.
And also there was an Indian at the same time, a Persian too. They did the six notes too. So anyway, you get back into Egypt and to China. And when Chinese, they were very much interested in balance. So their music was like musical feng shui. And there's all this stuff written on it. But they would use their music, according to these writings, to police their people. And I thought that sounded kind of wacky, but their dynasties did last thousands of years. And
well, even in America, well, England actually, six notes away was called the devil's triad, and they weren't allowed to use it in music, in church music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a control thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so they were into balance, and they were into, like, the imagination. They were, again, were involving into matter, and they were very much into playing the stars. So for each zodiac sign, they would assign a note, and then you would only play in certain keys and certain instruments during certain times of the year. They were into balancing the subtle energy. I'm assuming that that would also be from the seasons, because winter feels different than spring, and the moisture's different, and the sunlight's different. So anyway, they were into this balance, and then they would police their territory by controlling what people could hear, because that would influence their mind, body, and soul. And they used to have, like, to increase their power, like I read about having orchestras that would have like 10,000 people. I mean, there's not even 10,000 people in the town I live in. So, but they would do that because they believed like each tonality was a telephone line to God. And I guess the more the better or something. But anyway, so they were into using music to balance your soul, your spirit, I should say. And then when you go on in time, in the Greek period, the music goes into tetrachords. And it took me a long time to figure this out because I kept thinking of chords, like we go bum, 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 1, 3, 5. But that's not what they had for a chord. It's like the chord tetrachords, they were always a fourth, what we'd call four piano notes apart. But in between them, they had different notes. They'd have four notes in between the one and the four on our piano. But then they would vary, and they'd kind of have different moods. And my understanding is that they were named after people who were kind of like that mood, like, Iodian or Dorian or Lydian. Mixolydian, I don't know how to pronounce them all, Hypodorian. Anyway, they have these different modes. And now my understanding or my belief would be that, people are, again, involving more in matter. They're getting more away from spirit. And as they, as the tones kind of get closer together, they're more into personality. And music at this point in time still has, doesn't have any beginning or ending. It's just more like loose tones from what I could see. And particularly with the Greek period, I was able to find that the music is only descending. It doesn't ascend. Again, I believe that's because the people were still involving into matter. And then when you go to the Middle Ages, like when you read in the beginning of the Middle Ages, they talk about the interval of a third being dissonant, you know, like scratching your fingers on the nail on the blackboard or something, you know, whereas to now it's very consonant. But anyway, the church took it over, and they kind of took over these different scales, one of which was the solfeggio scale and all these other Greek scales. And again, I'm not saying this is true. I'm saying it's true. I've read it, but that I have read that the Catholic Church took the solfeggio scale off the market, if you will, and they used it for their high healing mass. And I've also read that, like, when Pope John died, you know, and they have those little bells on like a stick, that would be like the solfeggio scale.
And Jill, this sounds like a wonderful book. Are you writing anything like this?
No. I could, though, I suppose.
Wow, awesome. I'd buy a copy. Or two or three.
Geez, you're gonna flatter me.
Putting all of this together, just from the idea of using music to police people physically to the evolution of the mind and personality, it's just incredible.
Oh, it's so exciting. It's so exciting. And then, you know, I can fill in all kinds of little stories and techniques in between, because when they're talking about changing your consciousness, because really what they're saying is that music is a forerunner to a society's consciousness. And I'll give you more and more examples. But consciousness, the way they define that, is body, mind, and soul. So if someone has cancer and they want to raise your consciousness, it might be a byproduct that the music cures the cancer. So when they talk about consciousness, I mean, this is very, very powerful stuff. Oh, and I'll go on. I'll go on because it's exciting. Okay. So anyway, like now that the Catholic Church has, I forgot the solfeggio song. But anyway, the Catholic Church now has control. And because it's in the church setting, they have amens, and that's the beginning, from what I can see, of like music having a beginning and an ending. Like before, it would be more like wind chimes, you know, just different floating tones. But now with the amen at the end, it begs a beginning and an ending. It's also the first time you have ascending music. And the different scales, from what I've read about the solfeggio scale, I got excited about that when I read this book by Horowitz and Leonard, and they had talked about decoding a verse in Numbers in the Old Testament, and they spend a whole chapter on it, and they talk about the scale that's encoded there, and they give you the keys on how to uncode it. And so I had them made into tuning forks, because these are all in between our piano notes, and I had read that this is a very healing scale, and it's one that the Catholic Church, from what I had read, had been pulled off the market because they were using it for their, so that they would be able to heal, is what I had read.
Church would have the control.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there is a healing clinic run by a David Hulse in Ohio, and he's trained thousands of people, and he has incredible healing stories about these tones. Like the fifth tone is the exact tone of your DNA. And he gives, you know, well, thousands of people that he's trained, they talk about the different tones. Like the first one, they're saying, liberates energies and blockages and subconscious negative beliefs.
So do you start with a a bass tone, and then the fifth tone away from that bass is the DNA?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that was, no, wait a minute, it was the third tone was repairing DNA. They were similar to our scale, but not exact. And it's a frequency code. And so, like, for the first numbers, if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then the second number, like, all the numbers as they go down a column, they go up one successive number, like, I don't know if I'm explaining this real well, like 396 is the first frequency, then the 3 becomes 4, the 9 goes to 1, there's no 0, the 6 goes to 7. So the second frequency is 417. And, you know, that's reportedly for helping people change and increasing their energy.
How do they get a base when they do this?
I don't know. They decoded it out of the Bible in Numbers in the Old Testament.
Yeah, I read Lynn Horowitz's Healing Codes book.
Okay.
I didn't get all of what you're getting out of it because I'm really musically stupid. I should say ignorant. We didn't have music in my school. Went to a four-room school out. And so I've never had any kind of basis in music, although I hear it. I don't know how to put it together.
I don't know the answer to that question as far as the bass. I just know that they have this pattern that has a clear cyclical pattern to it.
Okay, go ahead. And I'm sorry I bugged you here.
Yeah, so I had them made into tuning forks, and I put them like wind chimes in the back of my Paint Your Soul CD. And in that, well, I'll get back to the CDs later. I should perhaps finish up about the history. So anyway, so they had these different scales, and then the Catholic Church, they were favoring two, which we now use today, called major and minor. But the church started to lose control of the music, and this is the first time I can see in history ever that government has not controlled music, because they're using music as an incredible powerful force. And in fact, when you go through the different mystery schools, you know, like the Tibetan monks and different secret societies, they talk about the power of sound being more than anything. Like I remember Helena Blavatsky saying that sound is hidden power, that it's like a million times the electric power of Niagara Falls when properly directed. Or here's another one, upon the wings of sound, the path of higher evolution is traveled. That one's Alice Bailey. Or when light has served its purpose in our development, sound appears. And there's a guru, Nanak Sufi. And anyway, I could go on and on and on, but the ancient people found like sound is the quickest, fastest, most permanent pathway to God. Okay, moving on. So you get into the Middle Ages, and the church loses control because now people or musicians are able to make a living by people coming to pay to hear them. And when this happens, the scales get modified because they were based in the past on different formulas, like this solfeggio. It's a formula. And when you have these different special formulas, like the Pythagorean scale or the just intonation scale, when they're on these perfect mass, you can't go like on a piano from one scale to another. You'd have to have another piano or retune the whole thing. So it got very expensive. And so my understanding is that when equal temperament came in, it changed all the tones. It's like you take an octave now and you just double the tone. You forget about the Pythagorean coma, which was very important to many people. But it's, you know, we're talking about economics now. And so in order to be able to have music for opera singers who say, I want it a little higher or lower, you need to be able to quickly transpose. So in comes just intonation. And now, I've read about that. I could write a book on that. People have written and saying that basically that it's like oral caffeine. And you'll notice in the Western world, we've been much more industrious than, let's say, India, who doesn't use the equal temperament. Here's just another book where I'm reading where they're talking about the notes are more of a, like an image of it. It's because it's modified in the tonality, we kind of have an unreal image of them. And they talk about how the changing of the scale just locks us into one more step into involution, closer to matter, further away from God. Not putting a judgment on this, whether it's good or bad. Maybe it's just a journey. And so, I know one other thing. I remember reading in, at the time of probably around Christ. It was a little bit earlier. There was this thing I read in antiquity. And it's weird. It's like 600 people were murdered, and they were fighting over whether to keep time with lunar or solar, and how to calculate their scales. And they're mass murdering people over this. I mean, you know, what would they do if their football team lost? I don't know. but because they believe that how you tune, and they were making parallels in this particular antiquity piece about time, and they paralleled it to music. And they were saying that if you get your scale off a little, you start getting further and further away from God. And so they were willing to kill over it.
Well, is there just one perfect scale that we should be using and all the rest are man-made or something?
I don't know of one. If it is, I always feel like, just like, you know, with medicine, if you were to ask a doctor to come up with one antidote for everything, of course he couldn't do it. To me, music, it's like it depends on what you need or what you want, because it's like everything is available in it.
Do a lot of different societies have this idea of a soul note or a creation note?
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes, they do.
Yes, is it common? Is it everywhere?
No. They used to, in antiquity, they used to hold what they felt was the note of creation, like in the different epics that I was talking about, like the Persian and the Chinese. They would have 24/7 choirs. And in fact, they mapped ley lines of the earth. I've seen some of these maps. Like, it's like little world maps, and they're places that we would consider spiritual, you know, like the pyramids, or where the famous churches in Europe were built, where there's ley lines, and that would be electromagnetic energy from the earth's molten iron in the different currents, where those energy lines cross. And they would map them, and then they would try to sing on those lines to maintain control and power. It would be like they'd try to raise the earth's energy. I read about that in the Druid thing too. And again, this, we're getting back into the late Middle Ages, Middle Ages, I should say, that the Druids would keep 24/7 choirs going. And before they fell for the Inquisition, of course, the music goes first, because the music's like the forerunner to the change. At least this is what I'm reading. The music is a forerunner to the change in a society. But they would keep these saws. They would pass them down one to one. And it's very hard to find this information. You have to read a lot of antiquity, because they guarded this stuff very, very much, because to them it was power. So, you know, I'm just piecing it by here and there in these little pieces and putting these pieces together. And then I had some really cool books that I read reportedly by ascended masters. I don't know if they were or not, but they were really cool to read. And they said, they were talking about the Middle Ages, and they were talking about how that it was the perfection of the mathematical patterns in the music of the Renaissance that brought the human race out of the Dark Ages. And Europe, of course, came out first, they said, because the music was in Europe. And they talk about, like, the early classical musicians, like, let's say, Mendelssohn, who's very frilly with his turns and his trills and very ornate in his music style. And they write how the music comes in first, and you can go in history and look at the music, the frilly ornate styles of music come in, and then shortly thereafter you'll note that the architecture the Victorian architecture becomes frilly and ornate, and the Victorian dress and styles become frilly and ornate. But that's because the music came in and, like, etched the pattern in consciousness first. And then in reading this, these kind of books, they're really kind of cool. They talk about how that it did introduce beauty, and it did, if you will, add an element of enlightenment to bring the people up. But the music is not like a God thing. It's just like a communication tool. It's like a telephone wire. It's not what you say on the phone. It's just that you can say something on the phone. And so that music had done something good, but they were assessing that the people in the Victorian area had pretty outlooks now. Maybe some of them had pretty homes and dress, but very cold, dispassionate hearts. So they talk about overlighting Beethoven to bring in compassion. And I don't know. I mean, Beethoven does it for me. I could kill myself after listening to Moonlight Sonata. I mean, it's so deep to me.
Well, that's an incredible premise, though.
Yeah.
That the music ushers in the consciousness,
yeah,
even down to the architecture. That's
absolutely
just incredible.
Yeah. And then they go in and they said to check the history books, because they said there will not be a charity prior to Beethoven. They're all after. Because he opened up their hearts.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that exciting?
And
then, of course,
all of this you have put in your album.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could get into that. And then, like, the twos, to me, the interval of the two, because now in the Middle Ages, of course, you're on bum, 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 bum. I mean, that's a 1-3-5, but still there's, you could almost call the second, fifth, almost like a minor third. So it's still a system of threes in the Renaissance. And then the melody, of course, is a system of twos, and rap music's clearly a system of one, which means that tonality has now taken their cultures, and we've now involved in the matter, and now I'm just, you know, playing like, okay, now it's time to evolve out. So I've taken techniques and I've from history and I've put them in the different CDs because I figured now it's time to evolve out.
What would rap music be?
Ones,
all ones. Mm-hmm. What about these very sophisticated polyrhythms?
You know, I'm not as well versed on rhythm, though I'm very excited about it as I would like to, but I definitely think that there's a evolution in rhythm as well. And obviously, you know, the shamans could get you to leave your body, or perhaps leave your left mind and go to your right mind, and they were able to do soul travel with rhythms. So I know there's a lot in rhythms, but I haven't been able to get as much out of it.
There's some new experiments going on now where people are turning off the right side of the brain mechanically, and all of this incredible artwork and music and evolution comes out of people that didn't even know they could draw. So your music of putting people into one brain or the other just sounds phenomenal. And so when people... Talk about each of your albums and how what pieces of what you're talking about is in each of the albums.
Okay. On the Paint Your Soul, I put the solfeggio tones into tuning forks because they would be in between our piano keys. I also took the solfeggio, the Fibonacci series of numbers. And if anybody saw Dan Brown's movie on the Da Vinci Code, they talked a lot about the Fibonacci series of numbers, and that was in from around Italy. There was a man who just observed, or at least documented and got credited for it, that the patterns in nature and biology and, you know, the stars and so forth, they all followed the same numerical pattern called the Fibonacci series of numbers. And I just had that converted into tones because, see, the ancient people, like, as I mentioned earlier, they're murdering people over what scale you use. And I was just having a hard time imagining that being so important. And so I was trying to put myself, pretend I was like in their their shoes, and I believe that they saw like a spiral in the shape of like a star system, like the Fibonacci series of numbers being the pathway to God, and that the quickest and fastest way to become closer to God energy or to enlightenment, they were thinking, was to hang on these tones. So with Pythagoras, he documented the Pythagorean coma too, that when an octave, it's like normally we would say 100 hertz, so that's little sound humps per second, that that if you double them, you get an octave. But Pythagoras found it was you double them and then a little itty bitty bitty bit. So that if you were to draw, if you were to graph that, it would be a spiral, not a circle. And equal temperament toning, which we use when we turn on the radios or use our pianos, if we were to graph that, it would be a circle. So I just did the spiral energy, and I put it, I put that in tuning forks as well. And then the other thing I did in the Paint Your Soul was I got into the intervals of 3, 6, and 9. 3 and 6 being healing, and 9 because of the Lemurians saying that that was, you know, the path to God. So, you know, there's a pattern, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, whatever. So instead of using, like, just traditional chords, I used some of those patterns. And it sounds really quite nice, I thought. And then the other thing I did on all of my music is that I'm a trans-channeler, so I noted that, like, when I channeled, I channeled one time and the recording equipment was on. And anyway, it doesn't make any sense. I was silent at that particular moment, but I noted that you could edit the feeling of somebody, the feeling who I was channeling. But it's like, if you think about your mother, you know what she feels like. You could pretend she's next to you. It's just a feeling. And I got that feeling whenever I channeled. In fact, I could tell who they were before I ever spoke because I got that feeling. And then I noted when I was taping my music that I got that feeling recorded right on the tape. I could tell you when they were there and weren't there. I could feel it. So I put in a beautiful being in on each track. I do that on all my music. Okay, I'm just having fun. I think it's me. It feels good. And then so that was that CD. And then kind of like similar.
When people listen to that, are they healed? Is there results of them listening?
Well, I've had incredible comments. I've had people tell me that they found the most sacred part of their selves, or the first time they felt loved, or that they cried for, many people have called me and told me they just cry. Some people have called and said that, you know, they don't like meditation music, so, you know, it's not like it's knocked everybody off their feet, but I have lots of letters saying, I have one lady who said that she had a near-death experience and that this was like the music she heard when she was, after she died, and she had gone to these really cool places. I mean, I've heard lots of wonderful comments I've been very happy to receive. So anyway, then the next CD called Stardust, I got into what the Chinese were doing in their spirit. So there I just used like chordal patterns of in the fives. And they were into the stars, and they were very careful about hiding their stuff because it's power. So I know that there are certain tones associated with the zodiac, and so I could use those. But I also got into this physicist from Germany called Hans Kusto. He wrote a book, and it was on...
The Cosmic Octave.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has, like, it's in the appendix more so in the book is where the good stuff, I thought, was. But he had this formula for, like, if you had a stick with a string and a ball, and you whiz it around, you know, he says it makes a noise. So therefore, he applied that formula in physics, where you could calculate the pitch of basically a ball in motion. He applied that to the solar system, and then he came up with tones. And I used that. I was going to use SOHO, which is the satellite that, you know, records space sounds, but the ancients were so careful to have certain music during certain times of the year. And the concern about just using a recorded sound from space was that as it moves through space, and as time changes, the impact on you is different. So I used Hans Costa's notes, and so I put in like star tones. And then I found some formulas for elements, which I know you're familiar with. So I put in some tones for carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and then the channeling. And I did get one comment that I thought that was really neat. Somebody told me they had a air cleaner that turns off when the air is clean, and all you had to do was turn on my music, and it shut off. So I was, I don't know, you know, how that science document, I doubt that, but it made me happy. So, and those are kind of parallel music. And then the symphonies should be out real soon. I'm just waiting for someone to master. And those are the 12 symphonies on the emotions. And then I have so much music written that I just don't have out yet. But I can't wait to get at it because I have so many great ideas.
If people want to order your music, how can they do that?
Well, my website, it's JillsWingsOfLight.com.
That's plural, Jills.
Yes.
Wings of Light. And while you're in there, guys, look at all this wonderful painting she does.
Thank you.
The paintings themselves are meditative.
Thank you. I just feel like we all are inspired, and I find out so much about myself when I paint. I really like to do it. It's very revealing.
Jill, do you think there's one note, one frequency that's more important than the rest?
I don't think so, no.
Because I think
we're all different.
To each individual, is there one note that's more important?
Yes, I would think so. I think that people are drawn to different notes. Like I think that you're drawn to different keys, and you're probably not aware of it. And I also read someone who had analyzed the tones of different organs and found that Beethoven was writing for his own illnesses. He was probably most subconsciously writing music that would heal himself. And I think that if we listen to our hearts and our feelings, that there's great intelligence there, and that that you'll be drawn to music that's good for you.
Joe, I know you do workshops for people, and one of the things that we've talked about is the workshop you did that helps people change their personality. We have about 5 minutes. Can you talk about those workshops and how people can get involved?
Sure. Let me see, how would they know about them? I guess would be best to just email me. Oh, no, here's a good way. Yeah, email me, which is Jill I. Matson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N, at Yahoo, and I could put you on a mailing list, or JillsHealingMusic.com has some free music and a free newsletter on healing music. That's JillsHealingMusic.com. But anyway, the one workshop, I do all, I'm just so excited about music, so everything I do is about music, but, the one about changing your personality, I found again in this writing stuff that one of the quickest and most permanent ways, and I think that would be the biggest benefit about using sound, is that, antiquity had always felt it as the most powerful and most permanent way to change a whole culture, and certainly to change yourself. And so I got into little details about changing your voice, whether you pretend you're like a radio dial. You can do it like in a left-brained way, an analytically way, so that you could worry about your pace, which is very indicative of your personality, or your pitch, or the feelings beneath your words. And we spend a lot of time doing that and different ancient techniques for using sound to find, you know, using your soul note or using it to soul travel. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do with sound. And but if you think about it, like if you say, oh, hello, I mean, there's a person who's meek or mild, and they don't have the bass tones in their voice.
Yeah, like, how can I serve you?
Yeah.
Is what that would say to me.
And also, they're the kind of people that can be taken advantage of, abused, and so forth. And if you say, hey, you know, people back right off. And so that there's, I don't think people are really conscious of the messages that they are asking, or that maybe they're asking other people to treat them in a certain manner by simply how they control their voice. It's just very powerful.
And is this what you teach people?
Yeah, in that workshop. Mm-hmm.
Do you do private lessons, too, with people, individual sessions?
Sure.
And what kind of change have you seen if somebody goes down here or up there in your nose? Do they completely change their life by changing their voice?
Yes. Now, they have to change the voice more than just once at the workshop, but absolutely. You can also, like, feel different chakra energy in your voice. Like, for example, this is hard to say on the radio, but there's a little exercise I could give you that could take you right into speaking out of your base chakra. And when you do that, you get, like, lower harmonics. Your voice sounds more masculine. You can't help it. It's just a little body position. And, you know, so that makes you more grounded and more rooted. And so there's also little exercises where you can go to pull energy into your voice from the various chakras. And it's a balancing tool. Or even if people were to decide, what is the one thing I'd like to change in myself? Of course, I'd have a laundry list. But at any rate.
people can get in touch with you about doing these kinds of sessions with you through your website?
Probably best to again to email me, and I could let you know when I'm doing them, or I'm more than happy if there's enough people to go and do a workshop someplace else.
And can they order your book and your CDs from the website?
From Jill's Wings of Light. Imagine that. Wings of Light was already taken, so it had to be Jill's Wings of Light.
We are out of time.
Okay.
Isn't that incredible it went that quick?
Yeah.
Jill,
so
we're going to have you come back because there's so many other things I would like you to talk about.
I'd love that. Thank you.
Your paintings and your book and all of these people you interviewed.
That would be fun.
I want to talk about some of those. 'Cause from what you've gathered, there's an incredible amount of information that you can share. And on some of your CDs, you also sing.
Yes.
And so we're going to leave the short hour with Jill with one of her songs, Happy and Free. And is this you singing or
yes.
other people?
No, this is me.
Okay. Thank you, Jill, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, audience, for listening. You can write to me at sharryonair, sharry, onair@gmail.com. Thanks for being with us.